Good morning, everyone. On Sunday mornings, I have been talking on this text, opening the hand of thought, and now we are on page 58. Last week, I even didn't read that paragraph. I started to talk about letting go of thought or opening the hand of thought, and we had many questions. And before I started to read the paragraph, it's done. This is a section in which Uchiyamaro, this is a book written by my teacher, Kosho Uchiyamaroshi, and I have been talking from the very beginning of this book, and if my record is correct, this is a 75th talk, still page 58. Anyway, this is a section in which Uchiyamaro explain about Zazen, how to practice Zazen. And in the beginning, he explained how to regulate our body, and the posture, and breathing. And then another important point of our practice of sitting or Zazen is, mind. Those three points, posture, breathing, and mind, are the three most important points in our practice. And about the mind, what's happening in our mind, in our sitting practice, Uchiyamaro used very unique expression in my English translation, opening the hand of thought, that is letting go of thought. And he used, I don't talk about letting go of thought this today. Another important point in his teaching about mind in our Zazen is wake up to life. Wake up is a translation of kakusoku that came from some Zen literature or Buddhist teachings. Anyway, in this translation, I don't talk about the original meaning. I have done already. And about wake up, Uchiyamaro used a kind of a diagram. You know, he put this kind of thing. He studied Western philosophy when he was a university student, so his way of thinking was very logical. And before Uchiyamaro, no Zen teacher explained about Zazen in this way. So this is a kind of very unique way of explaining what's happening in our mind, in our Zazen. And according to him, you know, this is the reality of Zazen. That means, he said, thinking is not Zazen. Sleeping is not Zazen. You know, when we sit with this posture facing the wall, we can do two more things besides just sitting. Just sitting is what we do. But besides just sitting, we can do two things with this posture. One is the thinking, another is sleeping. And he said, if we sit in this posture, facing the wall, and thinking, then it's not Zazen at all. It is thinking. Same thing what we do when we sit at the desk. So thinking is not Zazen. And another thing is sleeping. We can sleep. So there are two things we can do besides just sitting. And Uchiyamaro said, while sitting, when we start to think, our thought go up and up. And if we continue. But what he said in this text is, whenever we are aware, that we are thinking. Thinking means there's a separation between person sitting and thought. And this person sitting become a subject, and thought coming and going in our mind become object. So within our mind, there's a separation between subject and object, and we start to interact. You know, I like this thought, or I hate that thought, or I didn't want to, you know, have that kind of memory. You know, those things happening in our mind become the object. And whenever we aware that we are interact with that thought, that means there's a separation between within our mind, between subject and object, we stop it and return to just sitting. That means just sitting in this posture and breathing deep and quiet, smooth breath from our abdomen. And we keep our eyes open during our Zazen practice. We don't close our eyes. That means we don't sleep. And letting go of thought. That is what we're supposed to do. That is just sitting. So whenever we start to do something, we stop it and return to just sitting. And he said, after forever, we might become sleepy and go into sometimes deep sleep. But whenever we find we are aware of sleeping, we return to just sitting. This is what we actually happening in our mind, in our Zazen. We start to think, or we start to sleep and have a dream. And dream in our Zazen and thinking looks very similar. If we are sleeping and dreaming, we can think that this dream is reality. Anyway, actually our Zazen is a kind of a repetition of this awakening. This awakening is called Kakusoku, or in this translation we translate up as a wake up. So we wake up from thinking, or from sleeping, or drowsiness, and try to keep sitting, just sitting. This is what we do. And you know, the moment we return to just sitting, maybe next moment we start to think again. And Uchiyama Roshi said, we repeat this billions of times. So the goal of our Zazen is not stick on this line, but keep returning to this just sitting is the point of our practice. Of course, sometimes we have a kind of condition that we don't have any thought and we really clearly awake. But that sometimes that kind of condition is called enlightenment. But at least in my lineage, or the way I was trained, that is not enlightenment at all, because it is a condition. Enlightenment has nothing to do with condition. Anyway, if we have such a condition, we can enjoy it. But it doesn't last forever. You know, sometimes soap start, you know, coming up. Anyway, this is what we do in our Zazen. So letting go of thought and awake to this, just wake up and return to just sitting. That is what we do in our Zazen. And the previous section or paragraph in page 57, he says, by practicing, you know, this very simple and according to Uchiyama Roshi's teacher Sawaki Kodo Roshi's saying, this is good for nothing. I mean, we gain anything. We simply repeat the, you know, awakening, wake up from thinking or sleeping. That's all we do. So there's no goal. The point is just be right now, right here. Whenever we find, you know, this right now, right here is just sitting. So whenever we find we deviate from just sitting, we just return to here and now and just sit. So there's no goal, nowhere to go. We always try to be here, right now, right here, what we are doing. That's all we do. And by practicing with this kind of attitude, what we see, what we found is our thought is just empty coming and going. In the end of page 57, he said, anyone who does zazen is actually unable to experience with her whole body that thoughts are nothing but empty coming and going, without any independent or unchanging substance. Thought is so always coming and going. It's like a bubble. You know, bubble came out from the ground somehow and stay for a while, and when it reach the surface, it disappear. And the clouds are the same. Somehow it appear, stay for a while, changing the shape, and disappear into the blue sky. Our thought is the same thing. No thought stay forever. You know, I have been practicing for 40 years, but I never had any thought who stayed forever with me. Everything is coming and going. That is what we see from this very simple practice. But in the final sentence of the last paragraph, he said, however, unless we actually practice zazen, this is very difficult to understand. And he discussed why. That is the starting point of this paragraph, page 58. And this is also the meaning of this very simple practice of just sitting in our daily lives and also in the modern society. So hopefully I try to talk on two paragraphs today. Second paragraph, page 58, he says, I realize that to say you cannot understand this without doing zazen may sound presumptuous. I say this because usually we are unable to recognize that what we think about is nothing but empty comings and goings due to plunging our heads too far into our thoughts and living too much in the world of thought. Once we think of something we want or like, we assume that the simple fact of thinking we want it or like it is the truth. Then, since we think this idea is the truth, and is worth seeking, we proceed to chase after it everywhere, and our whole world becomes a world of greed. On the other hand, once we think of something we hate or dislike, we assume again that the simple fact of thinking we hate it is the truth. Thinking that this idea is the truth, so we ought to follow it. We chase after it until our whole world turns into anger. Next paragraph. The activities in our everyday lives are almost entirely the result of chasing after ideas this way, causing vivid, lifelike images to become fixed in our mind, and then giving more and more weight to these fixed delusions and desires, until finally we get carried away by them. It would be even more accurate to say that ordinarily we are being flung about by desire and delusion without even knowing it. It is like a man who is drinking sake. Sake is a Japanese alcoholic drink, consuming fantasies. At first, he knows that he is getting drunk. But when he gets to the stage where the sake is drinking the man, then he is adrift in fantasies without even knowing it, and he acts accordingly. Almost all people and societies throughout the world today are carried away by desire and delusion. This is precisely why our Zazen comes to have such a great significance. When we wake up during Zazen, we are truly forced to experience the fact that all the things we develop in our thought vanish in an instant. This is, according to Uchiyamaros, this is the meaning of our really simple practice of just sitting in our daily lives, and not only our personal lives, but in this modern society. First, he said, I say this is really difficult. You know, we are simply moved by our thought unless we practice, you know, this kind of Zazen. When we practice Zazen, we see the thought is like a cloud coming and going, somehow appear, stay for a while, changing the forms and disappear. In our Zazen, we are like a blue sky. Within this blue sky, somehow thought come up, stay for a while, changing the shape and disappear. And during Zazen, we determined not to do anything based on those thoughts. Then somehow thought disappear. And of course, next thought come up, and this continues. But within our Zazen, we are like the blue sky, and thought are like clouds. Sometimes, you know, white, peaceful clouds coming and stay for a while. within the blue sky, and it might be very pleasant. But sometimes more than half of the sky was covered with clouds, or even entire sky was covered with clouds, and sometimes we have storm. So we have all different kind of condition in our mind. If we practice continuously, you know, we experience all different kind of conditions, like weather we have. And that's all we know. You know, thoughts are like a glass, and also, of course, thought is really a powerful thing sometimes. It can be very peaceful and funny and pleasant, but sometimes it's like a storm. It has really powerful. Sometimes we are really overwhelmed by the thought or feelings or emotions. But what we do is keep this upright posture. Then in order to practice this very simple, good-for-nothing practice, we need to have a faith or trust that, you know, that we are living underneath the clouds, but beyond the clouds, you know, there is always sky is always blue, and sun is always shining. But we cannot live up there. We have to live down the clouds. So we have to go through all different kind of conditions of weather. And another thing that we can learn from this very simple practice is keep this posture upright. Keep our posture upright and go through any conditions. Whether then our condition is present, we can enjoy it. Even, you know, the condition is very difficult, still try to keep walking with this upright posture. That is what we learn from this very simple practice. But what Uchamuro is saying here is to see, you know, thought or emotions or things happening in our mind simply like a clouds coming and going is really difficult unless we practice the Zen. Because in our daily lives, as he said, due to plunging our head too far into our thoughts and living too much in the world of thought, so we create the world of thought in which something is wrong, something is right, something is positive or negative, something is more important than other things, or good and bad, right or wrong. That is the world of our thinking. And of course, to live within the human society or community, we can, you know, we need to communicate each other and live on the basis of convention. So somehow we have to study those conventions, and it's important to have some agreement with others to live together with other people. Still, we think, because thinking is fact, is kind of dominate, you know, this conventional world. We think what we think is reality itself. That is the problem. And here our channel is called, that is a delusion. This expression, due to plunging our head too far into our thought, and he used this expression, plunging our head into thought. He often, he had a very good sense of humor. and often he introduced some interesting and funny or story. One of the, you know, kind of a traditional art of comical storytelling. It's called rakugo, and he loved it. And when he used this expression, plunge into our head, into the thought, he introduced one very funny story from the rakugo. That is, there was very nonsense but funny story. That is, there was a very greedy person, and he had some cherry, the fruit cherry, and because he was really very greedy, he didn't want to throw that seed out, so he ate cherry with seed. And somehow, don't think this is a real story. From his head, the cherry tree started growing and have beautiful flowers in the spring. And people came to see the flower, cherry blossom. And it was a kind of a Japanese traditional culture that when we had a cherry blossom, they come underneath the tree and have a party. So many people came to his head and had a party to fun. It became too noisy for him. And he hated that. So he cut the tree and take the stump up from his head. Then he made a hole in his head, and on the hole he water is what they call the hole become like a pond, and fishes start to live. And then people come to fish at his head. So it became a problem for him again. And so he tried to do something, but he couldn't do anything to, you know, take the hole out from his head. So the person plunged his body into that pond and died. That was the origin of this, his expression, plunge into, you know, jump into the pond within his head. I don't know how it's possible, you know, but according to Chiamaru's, that is what we do. You know, we made a pond in our thinking mind, and we jump into that world, and we drown. That means when we think something, and in the context of Buddhist teaching, our thought is, you know, there are six sense organs, like eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Are called six sense organs, and there are six objects of sense organs, such as color or shape, as a object of eyes, and sound, smell, taste, touch, and object of mind are such as words and concept, or numbers. Those are not really the object of those five sense organs, but it become the object of our mind. And in Buddhism, this is called Dharma. So each of those six sense organs encounter the object of them. Then something happened. Caused by this contact between subject and object. Subject contact with object, then something happened in our mind that is called consciousness. Consciousness. So the consciousness caused by contact between eye and color is called eye consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose, tongue, body, and mind consciousness. And when we read or chant the Heart Sutra, it says, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, and no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, and no object of mind. Those refer to those six sense organs and the six object of sense organs. And when these subject and object have contact with consciousness happens. And when we think, we use this word thought. Thought is happening here. And here, you know, thought is called, you know, the based on informations we received from the consciousness caused by first five sense organs. And we create the world of thinking here. And some thought is very basic, and we almost all human beings share that thinking or idea, such as 1 + 1 = 2, or one day has 24 hours, or 1 week has 7 days, or 1 year has 365 or so days. That kind of information or understanding or knowledge is very basic kind of thought we studied, and there we almost all human beings share that kind of idea. And based on that, we have our own personal ideas. Maybe before that, we, depending upon which nation or culture, our view might be different. Because I'm from Japan, you know, my view is basically Japanese, and I use a Japanese language. That is the second layer of the knowledge I have. And based on that, you know, Japanese system of value and using Japanese language, I become a Buddhist. So my basic vocabulary and the way of thinking is Buddhist way of thinking, based on Buddhist philosophy. And on that Buddhist philosophy or understanding, my understanding of Buddhism, I make my own understanding of life, and I make choice or make decision whether this is good thing to do or not good thing to do. That is how our view and system of value are created. That is all happening in here. And all other different system of values or philosophies or personal preferences, all made in here between the contact with mind and the object of mind. And often we think, you know, those in the world of thought is the reality itself. But what Buddha taught was, you know, this is basically how can I say, the world of thought is created by the contact of subject and object. So in a sense, even though we all accept, agree and accept basic ideas, still those are the delusion, or at least illusion, but it's not real reality. You know, the world of thought is like a map or atlas that is a very incomplete copy of real reality before thinking. So there are two realities. One is real reality, and another is a reality I think it's real. That is a copy of real reality, and somehow it's distorted. And yet we think this distorted map is reality. And that is a problem, because the map we have are kind of different depending upon who I am, or whether I am a Buddhist or a Christian or Islam, or whether I am a Japanese or a Chinese or a French or American, or whether depending upon what kind of experience I had when I was a child in a Japanese society, when I was born and educated. You know, each one of us have different idea, different concept, different system of value. So we are different. Each one of us is different. But we think my map is absolutely right, correct. And if other people see the same reality from different ways, they are wrong. That is a problem, I think. So, one of the things we can learn from this simple practice and Buddha's teaching is our map is distorted. So we don't need to believe what I think is absolutely right or true, and what other people think is not absolutely wrong, even though it's different or sometimes opposite or completely against my thinking. It's simply another view. And according to Buddhist, traditional Buddhist teaching, that is not explained, but probably explain the word using one analogy that is used in so-called Yogacara school. Said, fish are swimming in the water, and we think a fish is swimming in the water. But probably the fish doesn't think they are swimming in the water. But for them, water is their life, or water is their palace, or their world. So the water for us and the water for the fish might be very different. And not only human beings and fish, but also in Buddhism it is said, for heavenly beings, water looks like a jewel. And for the hungry ghost, water looks like a blood or a pus. So depending upon our karma, the same water looks very different. And we should know that we have different consciousness, different idea, different concept about the same thing. That is what Yogacara teaching teaches. And that teaching is called only consciousness. So whatever we see, whatever we experience is only the consciousness. That is very basic point of their teaching. But Dogen is more kind of Dogen. Is the founder of our tradition, Soto Zen tradition in Japan. It's more kind of radical. He doubt even the existence of the same water. You know, in that analogy, we think they are the same water and different views depending upon our karma. But Dogen even doubt, is there such a water that is the same and each beings view different ways? How we can know? The only thing that is sure is each person has different views. Is there any such true reality beyond all those relative thought or not? I think we can doubt it. And this doubt is sometimes considered to be a nihilistic. We don't believe anything. But according to Dogen, that is not nihilism at all. But that is the way we can be free from our own grasping. So what we study from our this very simple practice of letting go of thought is just keep letting go and try to see the reality more and more clearly and closely. Without thinking there's a certain fixed reality, and because of our delusive thought or idea, or sometimes we, in Japanese Buddhism, we say, we all of us has putting on the sunglass. So depending on the color of the glass, the world looks different. So we have to keep inquiring what this world really like. That is the process of our studying Dharma. Please.
I think I understand what you're saying, but I guess my question is, it seems like just a philosophical position, you know, a questioning. But in fact, you know, if there's a pond or something, I mean, it's not blood, you know, or if you're drinking a glass of water right now, and you know that's not blood.
Right? For me?
For you, right? So... I guess how to keep that balance. You know, I think it's not reasonable to say, well, we don't know anything or we can't know anything.
That is what Dogen is saying. We know something, but we are not sure that it's really completely, absolutely true or not. So we need to have some, how can I say, have some room that from my experience and my knowledge and the information I have, this looks like this. And yet there's some room that might be not completely true. And to have to see this, even a tiny room or space, I think is important. That makes our view and our behavior, our way of life, flexible, and that allow us to listen to others and study more and keep inquiring. So Dogen doesn't say we don't know nothing, so our effort to study more is meaningless. So, but we have to keep studying and learning and inquiring, and yet there are some kind of a border or a limitation whether our thought is 100% true or not. I think this is kind of the same with our attitude of science. You know, depending upon the information and data we have, so far we can say this much. But if we have new information, we have to make change. And that is how, you know, science can be developed. And our Dharma inquiry, I think, is the same. Our Dharma inquiry means about our life. You know, depending upon our karma, things are very clear, and it seems everything is fixed. But it's not really true. This kind of questioning and inquiring a little more, I think, is important. And our practice of just sitting and letting go of thought allow us to see what I think is not really true, but it's a thought coming and going. You know, some thoughts are really like a cloud, but other thought seems very basic, like a ground or earth, and we don't think we have to make change, one plus one is two. It's really basic, and we don't need to doubt each time, but we can doubt. It's already 11. Let me finish this one paragraph. So as a result of we plunge our head too much into the world of thinking, he says, once we think of something we want or like, something positive or something which some object gives us present or positive feeling or sensation, we assume that the simple fact of thinking we want it or like it is the truth, which I'm also often used, often said, this fact and truth. This is a fact that I have certain present sensation from certain things, and I receive certain unpleasant sensation from certain things. That is the fact. But he always said, ordinary human beings think this fact is true. That is a problem that makes, this, what is happening become illusion, and we create a story, and the hero or heroine of the story is always me. That means something give me a present sensation is good thing, positive thing, and something which doesn't give me a present sensation is bad thing. Because this is the center of the world, or most important figure in that story. The world is created in that way. And certain people or certain things are bad things, and certain things are good people or good things. And we start to run after something we want or we like, or we think important, and we start to escape from something which gives us negative feelings. This makes our life, chasing after something or escaping from something, so we always running after something or escaping from something. That is a very basic cause of samsara. And what we learn from this just sitting is we don't need to run always. Sometimes we have to, but we don't need to always. We don't need to think running after something and escaping from something is not the purpose of life. Of course, we have to make effort to make this our life and this world something better, better than it is. But if we think that is the purpose of our life, we, in a sense, we plunge ourselves into that kind of dream or idea or thinking. And the opposite thing is also true about negative thing. Then, since we think this idea is true and is worth seeking, we proceed to chase after it everywhere, and our whole world becomes a world of greed. On the other hand, once we think of something we hate or dislike, we assume again that the simple fact of thinking we hate it is the truth, thinking that this idea is a truth, so we ought to follow it. We chase after it until our whole world turns into anger, the world of anger, and fighting against that thing becomes the purpose of my life. I don't have time to talk on the next paragraph. The next, this paragraph, he only said this: the meaning of our just sitting practice in our personal life, chasing after something we like or we hate. But the next paragraph, he said, all people, all human beings in the modern society live in that way and create even the fighting among the group of people. You know, this book was written in the 70s. That was the during the period of, you know, Cold War between communist and so-called capitalist. And in, especially in Japan, some people so-called, how can I say, conservative and progressive, people who think communism or socialism are good thing, or other people, you know, capitalism is good thing. They are always fighting, arguing and fighting. And even, you know, there is, because of the Cold War, there is the possibility that we have a nuclear war, depending upon, you know, the difference of thought, fighting each other, and it may, might, you know, be possible to destroy entire world. Now, you know, after the Cold War ended, we don't think of so much fear about the nuclear war, but I think the condition doesn't change so much. Anyway, I'll continue next week.